The incredible story of Jesus' raising of Lazarus has some very subtle and yet radical lessons of the power of God and the nature of the Jesus way of life. So let's dive right in. One of the great lessons we learn from this story is that God can do anything at any time. Now, this really isn't a new lesson in the narrative of God. Throughout the Christian scriptures and the Hebrew scriptures, time and time again, we find stories of human beings who think they are at their end or that there is no possibility for them, and yet God shines through them, glorifying God. Abraham and Sarah were old. Moses stuttered. David was small. The disciples were blockheads. Paul was short, unattractive, and often angry. And Lazarus was dead. And yet in all of these instances and many more, God glorifies God's self through these people. What we learn through Lazarus, among so many others, is that there is no aspect or avenue of the human condition that God cannot use to God's glory. In fact, we often find that God will choose to use human weakness to glorify God, because that way, we don't get to take the credit. It's only God. And so in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul talks about having a thorn in his side, a weakness given to him by God that he's fervently praying to have removed. But then God says this to Paul. God says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness." And so Paul says, "So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me." God can do anything at any time. But the next great lesson we learn from the story of Lazarus is that while God can do anything, God adamantly desires active and willing participants, co-creators for the kingdom of God. So here's the scene. Lazarus has been dead for days. The King James translation's a little better. Mary says, "Lord, he stinketh." And yet Jesus says, "Roll away the stone." And with the tomb open and the entire crowd of Jewish people there, what does Jesus do? Well, he doesn't really do anything. He doesn't run into the tomb and pick Lazarus up and try to resuscitate him. He doesn't even go up to the door of the tomb and sort of throw something at him to get him to come awake. From afar, Jesus simply says, "Lazarus, come out." Now here's my wonder. Could Lazarus have chosen to stay in there? Was God offering more of an invitation than a command? You see, death can be quite comfortable, and we'll get to that in a second. But Lazarus has been dead for days. And with the sudden shock of being found alive, could he have simply thought that it's too great of a conquest, too great to leave the tomb? And I wonder if he simply could have stayed there. But what I don't wonder is, he certainly had to struggle to claim his life. You see, back in that day and age, it was a common practice when someone died to bind their bodies tightly with bands of cloth. And this had a logistical reason. It was so the body wouldn't fall apart in decomposition. So Lazarus is awake. He's alive. But he's caught up in the bonds of cloth, and he has to certainly struggle to free himself just enough to leave the tomb. Now, the scriptures don't tell us how long this probably took. But it does say that when he appeared, and I imagine him barely crawling out of the tomb, we're told that he is still bound hand and foot, that his face is still covered with a cloth. I wonder if Lazarus had to choose to struggle for his life. One of my favorite theologians, Dallas Willard, says, "Grace cannot be earned. Jesus' resurrection call to all of us to come out of our tombs, that is Christ's power for resurrection, and that cannot be earned." But Dallas Willard says, "It is really helpful to participate in grace, to struggle with it, to choose life, and to struggle for who we truly are." God is looking for partners. So while we are alive, we also can find ourselves in tombs of death, places in our everyday experience, in our human condition, where God is calling us out of death into life. These take several and many forms. I want to look at today two types of tombs: the tombs of destruction and the tombs of denial. The tombs of destructions are when we find ourselves by an active choice in an action or a way of life that not only kills our soul, but takes life away from those around us as well. The easy examples are the people, the active alcoholic, or the married person in an adulterous relationship. These two tombs are actions that one participates in that ultimately leads to the destruction of the self and those around them. And all that is needed is a waking up to God's call and a struggling to accept God's grace. But there are other tombs of destruction that are quite refined and even acceptable in our society. There's the deadly tombs of destruction of cynicism, of hopelessness, of resentment and anger. These tombs can be just as deadly because they rob us of our lives and the lives of those around us, and they can be quite comfortable. How many of you know someone who's just simply bitter all the time? It's their tomb that they have found themselves dead in, and all they would need to do was to turn and accept the invitation of God to come out, and yet it would take a struggle to leave that tomb. But indeed, it is God's call to us to come out that gives us the energy to struggle. The other tombs I want to talk about are tombs of denial. Now, here's the good truth. You and I are wonderfully made. Each and every one of us, who we are, is unique as a creation of God, as a child of God, and beloved by God. And yet, sometimes in the kingdom of the world, we are told that who we truly are is either not good enough or something to be ashamed of. And that's wrong, and it's not true. But that voice of the kingdom of the world that tells us to bury that part of us that may be shameful or not appropriate is a loud voice, and oftentimes we get caught into listening to it without our knowledge. But Jesus says that no one lights a lamp and puts it under a bushel basket. Cities, glorious cities, were built on a hill so that all could see them. So in the same way, you and I, our authentic selves, who we truly are, is not to be buried, but to be proclaimed, to shine. And so we must, when we hear God's call to our authentic selves, struggle to be who we truly are, to accept God's invitation to come out and live into the resurrection light. And see, the tricky thing about this our own kingdoms and free will is that the choice to accept God's invitation of coming out and to struggle out of our own darkness, it's our choice alone. It is up to us to be free, and no one else can struggle for us, not even God. And so the third lesson is that we discover When we do accept God's call and we struggle to be who we truly are and to let go of what we are not, we discover that if we choose to partner with God, God will send God's partners to partner with us. As soon as Lazarus appears out of the tomb, Jesus turns to the crowd and says, "Unbind him and let him go." Now, another cultural context. Remember, this is ancient Judaism in which death was unclean. It was something to be avoided at all costs. And so to touch a dead person actually would exclude you from the communal life. And so all of a sudden you've got a crowd of people who've seen the dead person rise. What do you do? But in telling the community to unbind him and let him go, Jesus is including the community in the healing of Lazarus, but also in Lazarus' restoration to the community. They have to touch him to free him from his bonds. And that freeing of the bonds is not an individual act solely. It's a communal act also with God. When we choose to heed God's call to come out, and when we step forth from our struggle, God will send God's people to restore us and support us. We are never alone. And so the arc of the story of Lazarus is that God can do anything at any time, and yet God actively seeks, desires even, our active and intentional participation. But when we do participate, even the smallest struggle to leave death into life, God will send God's people to the fullness of restoration and connection with ourselves, with the community, and with God. And so the Jesus way of life is one where we have, each and every one of us, responsibility, both as individuals and as a community. As individuals, we must decide on a continual basis to struggle, to let go of what we are not, to enter into who we truly are, and to struggle on a daily basis to heed God's invitation into life. And this may be the hardest part of all. We must also allow others to struggle on their own. Perhaps one of the most cruel things we can do is to try to take someone's struggle from them. Think of it. The active alcoholic who some family member is continuing to enable actually takes the struggle away from them and thus takes away the very act that could lead that person from death into life. It's tricky and it's hard, but sometimes the most loving thing we can do for someone is to not struggle for them, but to let them struggle on their own. But as a community, we have the responsibility to be there for one another once someone has chosen the freedom of Christ. When someone chooses to accept God's call to come out and to leave their tomb, then we have the responsibility to be there to unbind and free each other from our individual struggles of our own fear and pride. But underneath all of that, it's best to remember that while we have responsibility, ultimately, Jesus is responsible. It is His kingdom, His power, the glory, and the grace that we are invited to participate in through His continuous call to our dark and deathful tombs. Come out. Come out.